Crime rates are down in Miami, and that may be due in large part to technology. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. The Miami Police Department recently released crime rates for 2017, and the homicide rate is the lowest it's been in half a century. Most crimes across the board are down. Today, we're going to talk with Miami Police Chief Jorge Colina to talk about how increased use of cameras and other technologies are helping keep crime down. Also, life for commuters in Miami is about to enter a painful phase. A massive construction project is about to begin. When it's over, the configuration of I-95 and the 836, as well as I-395, will change dramatically. But what will life be like for drivers during the work? Could it convince you to start taking the train? And finally, we sit down with the author, Preston Allen, to discuss his book, Jesus Boy, the January title for the Sundial Book Club. All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. All right, commuters in Miami, brace yourself. A massive four-year reconstruction project just kicked off, and your daily commute will likely change dramatically. By fall 2023, we should expect to see a double-decker freeway on the 836 and 30 acres of urban parkland and an iconic six-arch suspension bridge in downtown. A lot. Miami Herald columnist Linda Robertson calls this the mother of all construction projects, and she's joining us now from our studios at the Miami Herald in Doral. Linda, welcome.
Hi, Oscar.
Also joining us in the studio is Oscar Gonzalez, a senior community outreach specialist with the Florida Department of Transportation. He's overseeing the I-395 and I-95 and State Road 836 interchange. Again, a big project ahead of us. Oscar Gonzalez, also a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you, and good afternoon. Thank you for having us.
All right. So, Oscar, Linda, it's a pleasure to have you. And I want to post this out to the listener. If you commute through this area, what questions do you have about how much your life is about to change? What do you want to know about the construction project and the fact that, again, that it's going to take a number of years and how that may impact your daily commute? Give us a call, 800-743-9576. Again, that's 800-743-9576. Or find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial and post your question there, and I will read those off to our guests. Oscar, let's start with you. Why redesign a major freeway going into the city, in and out of the city right now? What's the need?
Well, the Florida Department of Transportation and partnership with the Miami-Dade Expressway Authority is investing over $800 million to improve and enhance the flow of traffic and access along three of the major corridors in the county right now. As you mentioned, 836, I-95, and the 395 corridor. So there are improvements that can be made. One of them that I'm sure the listeners can commiserate with me is on my way here, I was traveling eastbound on 836. And although I was going straight through onto I-395, I still had to slow down because of all the people queued up to go from that eastbound 836 ramp to I-95 northbound.
Oh, yeah.
So not only is the ramp backed up, but sometimes people wait to the very last minute on the two through lanes that are adjacent to that ramp lane to get in at the very last moment. So with this project, one of the improvements that we're going to make is we're going to double lane that ramp.
Okay, and I know that one well. I've come from both different sides. Actually, all three sides to get into downtown is the best way to get here to the studios. The construction's already underway? The project's already beginning?
This is a design-build project. So technically, we're still in the design process. So maintenance of traffic plans, scheduling are still being developed. They're still being reviewed. They haven't been 100% finalized. So yes, so you are seeing some activity right now. Linda mentioned that we have closures on I-95. Those closures are for the survey crews to go out there and survey the roadway. You may have seen this already, the pile operations that are going on 395. Those are not permanent piles. Those are what we call exploratory test piles. And basically what the contractor is doing there, he's driving those piles that have sensors attached to them. And they're getting feedback from those sensors. And that's going to allow them to further develop the plans for those foundations along those bridges.
So, Linda, in your story, you call it the mother of all construction projects, which doesn't make anybody feel any better about what's coming. But, I mean, what have you heard from readers about, you know, what's about to happen?
Well, Luis, I think we're all sort of hardened veterans in South Florida of perpetual construction projects. But this one is going to be different because it impacts so many different hubs in the downtown area, in the Civic Center, Jackson Memorial Hospital area, Miami Beach, you know, people who use 836, people who use the MacArthur Causeway, people who are trying to get downtown there to the arena or the Science Museum, the Arch Center. So I think it's going to have a huge impact on our driving patterns. And I think the key is to maybe adopt some sort of mantra that you can rely upon when you're in your car and you're going to be facing a lot of backups.
I mean, I laugh because, I mean, yes, I know. If you've been here long enough, you've lived here long enough, you already know what it's like. And so this is coming. And, you know, the other thing, too, I was thinking about was, and we were talking about it here in the office, is, you know, any of us who've lived in other cities that have been through this. And I've seen this in other places. And whenever they have these big construction projects, they always give it a nickname. And it's something ominous. Which is, it's great for the news when they talk about it every day. I think that the best one I ever heard was the T-Rex. You know, there was a project out in the West Coast. It was called the T-Rex, and it was just going to be this multi-year big project. And, you know, it was just meant to scare everybody. Like, okay, you're stressed out. It's because it's the T-Rex. But have you seen anything else like this? Is it really the mother of all construction projects?
Well, you know, in Boston, they had the Big Dig.
Right.
So that was a good nickname. I don't know what we could call this one, maybe the spider. But yeah, I think other cities, when they've made the commitment to do one of these major reconstruction, redesign, rearrangements, you know, everybody takes a deep breath and then prepares for it. And a lot of it is the logistics of how they're going to coordinate the various closures, the timing of everything. And I think people just learn. They get wise to the best ways to go to avoid the backups, and maybe it will encourage more people to use mass transit during this period, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and that's a good question. So again, I'm going to pose this question. If you have a question for our guests, you want to know more about the project, what it entails, how long it's going to take, anything at all. I also want to know from you is if, you know, this is going to change the way you commute to work. Maybe you'll consider train more. Maybe you'll change your daily commute and try to find an alternate route. 800-743-9576. Let me go to Renee in Miami Lakes. Renee, welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
Hi. So I have a question regarding the possibility of tolls, of additional tolls, or the tolls that we do have. Is money going to be allocated for these projects, and what are the other impacts regarding other projects along like 826 on the north, east to west, and north to south?
Right. Okay. All right. So thank you, Renee, for the call. Appreciate it. Okay. A couple things there, but let's start with his first question about tolls. Oscar, you know, first of all, I mean, the cost, $800 million, you know, some people say, well, why are we spending the money for that? We could be putting it towards public transit. But I mean, where was the money coming from for this project?
Well, $616 million is coming from the Florida Department of Transportation and our partners, the MDX, Miami-Dade Expressway Authority, that, you know, oversees.
Right.
836 is one of their five tolled highways, is putting in $186 million towards the project.
So he's talking about tolls. The other aspect, I'd imagine, I'm not putting words in his mouth, but I'm also curious, too, is the, you know, will the tolls extend? Will they be shut down during this construction? Or, you know, what can we expect?
The 836 is currently a tolled facility.
Right.
It will continue to be a tolled facility. There are not going to be any tolls placed on 395 or any tolls placed on any of the work that's.
Okay. Do we know anything? Will any of these tolls be increased that are on the 836 to help?
I don't know that.
Okay.
That would be something MDX.
Again, 800-743-9576. What do you want to ask about this upcoming project, this construction project, and how is it going to impact your life? Oscar, one of the marquee aspects of this project is the six-arched suspension bridge. It looks really beautiful, but tell us about that. What exactly is that? Why do we need it?
It's beautiful, and it was a part of the negotiations with the city of Miami. They wanted something that was transformational. So we are delivering a transformational, iconic structure. It is not, let's say, a fake bridge. It is actually a structural bridge with the six arches, as you mentioned. The span on the bridge is 1,025 feet. It will actually span over Northeast 2nd Avenue all the way through Biscayne Boulevard. The tallest arch is 330 feet up in the air.
So all of this construction, by the way, it's not just to help flow, the flow of traffic, you know, to improve it, but are we expanding lanes? Are we preparing for more cars?
We're adding capacity, yes, on 395, 836. Typical section on 836 right now is three lanes in each direction. So as part of this project, we're going to double deck 836 from 17th Avenue all the way over the I-95 interchange, touching down at 395. So right now, the folks that want to go straight through to the MacArthur Causeway are in the same facility that people with the people that want to exit on local roads or I-95. We already spoke about the issue with the ramps backing up into the through lanes. So when we're done with this project, those people that want to go into the MacArthur Causeway, to Miami Beach, the Port Miami area, they're going to be able to take that double deck section and either go straight through into the MacArthur Causeway without any of that local traffic, or go south into downtown Miami. Those people that want to access the local roads will stay on the lower level, and they can access the local roads, I-95, or actually continue on through to the MacArthur.
We're talking with Oscar Gonzalez, a spokesperson for the Florida Department of Transportation. Also, Linda Robertson, columnist for the Miami Herald, who recently wrote about this massive highway reconstruction project that is going to begin in downtown Miami. And it is a multi-year project, at least 4 years, $800 million. It's going to have a massive impact on your daily commute. Let me go back to the phones. I want to go to, it is, I believe, Jack in Key Largo, talking about long-distance travel. Jack, welcome to the program. Jack, are we there? Do we have Jack in Key Largo?
Yes, I am here.
Go ahead, Jack. I'm sorry about that.
Yes. I live in Key Largo, and I need to get up to Jackson Memorial Hospital on a regular basis, which requires that I go out on 836. And I was wondering if the municipality is going to post a website to inform the public about the details of the plan, and perhaps most importantly, advise the public alternative routes. For example, when I get off of the turnpike, is there going to be a more efficient way to get to my destination in the hospital district?
All right. Let me throw that to Oscar. Oscar, what can you answer for that question?
Thank you, Jack. That's an excellent question. The project, we have a project website, i-395miami.com. All the lane closures will be posted on that site. But in addition to that, if you are a regular traveler along any of these three corridors and want to be kept up to date with up-to-minute information, on the website you can sign up for email alerts. And every time there's a closure or a new construction activity, we will be sending that information out to subscribers in the email alerts. In addition to that, let me just say something about the maintenance of traffic. We are doing closures for this project, obviously.
Yes, you have to.
But they're going to be done during off-peak hours. They're going to be coordinated. And we're going to do everything possible to minimize impacts to the traveling public. In addition to that, part of the maintenance of traffic plan is to implement a smart work zone management system. And basically, this is an intelligent transportation system that's composed of traffic cameras, traffic monitoring devices, and portable changeable message signs. These devices are going to be placed well outside of the project limits, and they will be providing drivers feedback so that they can make decisions before actually entering the project corridor.
Linda, you know, ever since you published the piece, I'm wondering what readers have been saying to you. What is the biggest concern for them, or what have they been asking?
I think people are asking sort of the big picture question. I mean, we all know that this is going to be painful, but people are just sort of, now that it's upon us, they're asking, is this really the best use of this $800 million? I know that's simplifying the funding questions, but if you look at what other cities are doing around the world, including Seoul, South Korea, Paris, Seattle now is tearing down one of their major urban highways. San Francisco, after the earthquake, decided to, instead of rebuilding, they got rid of some major urban roadways, and it opened up that whole Embarcadero waterfront area, and it became just sort of a whole urban renewal there. So a lot of people are wondering, like, why are we adding lanes and adding roadway when we know that's going to induce traffic? You know, by the time the project is done, there's going to be more people living here, and there's going to be more cars. And then expanding highways, it's been shown over and over again, induces more traffic. And so there's been proposals over the years to just take 395 down. There's been proposals to bury it or to make a tunnel, you know, to relieve Overtown from that horrible suffocating effect of the overpass. So I've heard from a lot of readers who are really questioning if this is the right way to go. I mean, it's kind of too late now to reverse course, but should we have spent that money, you know, extending Metrorail to Miami Beach or improving our other mass transit options? Instead, we're investing in more roadway expansion because Florida Department of Transportation is all about traffic flow and traffic capacity.
Yeah, and again, this we're talking about this big construction project that's coming to Miami, again, impacting I-95, the 836, and I-395. It is a multi-year project, and it is going to impact our commute for the next 4 or 5 years. We heard on Twitter, Lorraine Dowdy tweeted at us, since 1977, not one roadway construction project has improved traffic congestion. It is time for better public transit, more Metrorail. Also, Joe Hatzel commented on our Facebook and suggested a nickname for the project. Maybe call it the Spiderweb. Again, find us on Twitter or Facebook at WLRN Sun, the Spiderweb. Yeah, on WLRN Sundial, and let us know your thoughts. Let me go to back to the phones. I'm going to go now to Dean in Miami. Dean, welcome to the program.
Hey there, and my question just dovetails into what was just said. In Miami, we have the wrong mentality. We always have the mentality to expand roads. We have no mentality to even maintain the pathetic mass transit system we have. We have hundreds of millions of dollars to build roads, and we can't maintain our existing mass transit system. That's not a world-class city.
Dean, thank you so much. We hear that a lot. We hear that sentiment a lot. But okay, Carlos, you know, one of the things you said is that part of this construction, we're going to see a double-decker roadway on the 836, Oscar. And so, you know, we were talking about this and thinking to ourselves, wait a second, what, how, you know, are we going to see that more often in Miami now, this construction, this idea of a double-decker road or more, just to be able to fit all the people that are coming here, all the commuters that we have?
Well, let me just address the transit issue. Obviously, there is an issue with traffic. A lot of people are moving into. This is a great look at our weather today. Beautiful area. The traffic problem is not a one solution. Does not have one solution. So while we're working on improving roads that need to be improved, we are also working on transit options. The county and the Department of Transportation are working on the SMART plan. We have been in coordination with the folks that are working on the beach corridor to tie in some kind of transit system into the beach. So everything is on the table here, and everything is being looked at.
Do you think that's where we're going, though? Double-decker lanes?
In this particular case, this is a design build. So the RFP concepts had actually the road being widened, 836 being widened to the outside. So one of the positive aspects of design builds, it fosters innovation. So this team, the Archer Western Des Moines joint venture, came up with this double-decker concept, and it actually reduces the construction impacts because you're not going outside of the right of way.
You're going, widening.
You're not widening. You're going up. And yes, I think based on right of way acquisition cost and things like that, this is something that could be done in the future.
Let me go to Carlos in Miami Beach. Carlos, thank you so much. Welcome to the program.
You know, I wanted to thank all you guys involved for helping us be informed about this, because I think it helps a little with the future frustration if you know what's actually going on a little bit. And my question was actually about the 195, which I know you haven't really mentioned, but I drive in and out of the beach every day on the 195 on Julia Tuttle, and I could swear I noticed the water creeping closer a little bit. And I just was curious if there was any talk or future plans about maybe, I don't know, some kind of seawall or any kind of anything that would be happening with along those lines.
All right. So, thank you, Carlos, so much. And yeah, it's the reason we have the conversation, because you do have to get ready for what is coming. But this goes to sustainability, I suppose. Linda, I mean, with all of this construction that's in the area, I mean, we always talk about the issues of sea level rise here in Miami and how that's going to impact. Does this kind of prepare us for that future? Is there talk about anything else in the area dealing with that?
Well, I think that's a whole nother issue, is our impending sea rise problems. But yet we continue to build. So I would argue that, you know, some of this energy and funding should be devoted to planning for a sea rise. We know it's coming. Instead of, you know, just throwing more money at expansion of our roadways, which is it's going to be impacted one way or the other by climate change.
Linda, one other thing I wanted to ask you, moving just to a different topic real quickly, is this expected to improve, the commute? No, I shouldn't say commute. Is this going to make things better for pedestrians, especially in Overtown? Because, historically I-95 split the town. Is this going to improve things for pedestrians coming in and out of the communities?
I think the idea, the plan, is pretty dramatic and impressive in what they want to try to rescue Overtown from the way that it was really just sliced through by these low overpasses. And there's like 440 concrete columns. And it just really devastated Overtown and created sort of a wasteland around 395 and below 395, to the point where, recently they had a crisis with homeless people and opioid addicts living under there. So the goal is it's going to be a higher elevation to the overpass, and it's going to be split into these elevated overpasses to let more light and sunlight in there. And then they're going to create an urban park with a pathway, a mile-long pathway that's supposed to run all the way to the waterfront, which would give more people access to the waterfront. They're going to have some plazas, gardens, fountains, musical areas, sculptures. So the idea is to sort of revive that whole sort of dead area and make it into a community gathering place, and also the idea is to connect some of the Performing Arts Center, the Science Museum, the Arch Center, the waterfront, and make those a little bit more connected. Whereas now you have these horrible embankments and columns and ramps that should be a beautiful part of downtown, and it's kind of a mess.
Yeah, no, and again, anybody who's taken that commute, and I will be the first to say, coming from Kendall, I've either taken from the 836, come due from west to east, and so I have to exit off of that area coming into the station, which is right there on near Biscayne and 15th, or I'm coming up 95. So either way, and Oscar, as you said, I know those exits when you're jumping on and off I-95. they'll take two or three lanes just to pack into that one exit. Oscar, the other thing too is, let's just come back to the big picture. I wanted to know, tell the commuter right now as they're listening, what to expect over the next 4 years. Will it get so bad that they have to consider another route, leaving earlier, or maybe taking the train? Is it going to be that bad?
I think, like I said, we're going to maintain the traffic, and we're going to do our closures during off-peak hours. Right now, we're limiting closures on we're limited to closures on I-95 for the work that we're doing for surveying. In February, we will start making closures on I-95 between 17th and 29th Street for work in the median. And there'll be other nighttime activities. Come March, April, we'll be implementing some closures. We'll be closing a section of Northwest 12th Street between Biscayne Boulevard and Northeast 2nd Avenue that will be permanently closed. We'll be rerouting traffic through 13th Street. We're going to add an additional lane on that section of 13th Street to accommodate the traffic. This may be something that you'll see. And the reason for this is because the foundations of the Signature Bridge are going to be in the area where Northwest 12th Street is right now.
It's still going to impact people. They just have to be ready.
Yeah, we have to be ready. And the key is outreach is an extremely critical part of this project. We have the project website. People can sign up for alerts. They can go to the project website. And in addition to that, we're willing to come out to the community. We have been doing so, make presentations to organizations. Those organizations can sign up for presentations on the website. And, you know, we'll be working with the media to get the word out.
The information will be out there, but prepare yourself. It is coming. It is what it is. This is life in the big city as we try to make things better. Oscar Gonzalez, again, spokesperson for the Florida Department of Transportation. We heard from Linda Robertson, columnist for the Miami Herald. Linda, Oscar, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Luis.
And again, you can always find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Let us know what you think. And if you have any other questions, you know what? I'll pass those questions back over to Oscar or to Linda or anybody who might be able to answer them as you get ready for the next 4 years and what's coming. All right, still to come, the latest crime reports show in Miami, crime rates are down. How is that happening? Well, we're going to talk with the Miami Police Chief about those latest figures coming up next here on Sundial. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Miami has long had a reputation for crime, but that perception is changing for good reason. The murder rate in the city of Miami has reached the lowest that it's seen in almost half a century. The official data showed last year there were 51 homicides. Compare that to the height of the cocaine cowboy days of the early 1980s. You'd see 300 a year or more. We're joined now by Miami Police Chief George Colina. And he's going to explain the city's low murder rate, the crime numbers are down. What is leading to this? And by the way, if you have a question for the police chief, we'd love to hear from you. What's going on in your community right now? What questions do you have? Give us a call, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-9576. Or find us again on Facebook or Twitter. Post your question or comment at WLRN Sundial. Chief Colleen, it's such a pleasure, man. Thanks so much.
No, and thank you for having me. I appreciate it, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Let's start with the homicide rate. Lowest it's been in more than half a century. How? What's leading to that?
So there's a lot of factors, and we're thrilled with the number. Now, of course, 51 is 51 too many, obviously. And so we've had families rocked by gun violence, and we're going to work every day to continue to improve. But it is something to still be pleased about because we're trending in the right direction, obviously. And I think there's a lot of factors. One is community engagement. So we've made a significant effort in making sure that we are out in the community doing events that involve the community that really are non-law enforcement events.
What does that look like? Give me an example of one that you do that you think is helping in building that relationship between the community and police.
So one of the things that we're doing are block meetings. So we have commanders that are responsible for the different neighborhoods in Miami. If a crime occurs on a certain block, or just in general, we will announce that we're having a block meeting. We have command staff come out. We invite the residents to come out, let them know what's going on, answer whatever questions they may have. Nothing is off the table. We're doing these more and more frequently. The residents seem to be responding. We'll just show up in the middle of a block, get out of our cars. We'll let them know ahead of time. And now we're available to brief them on what's happening in their neighborhood. And as well, answer any questions they may have. That's one element. Something else we're doing, for example, in Liberty Square, movie in the square. So we'll actually show a movie, invite people to come out and watch a movie. Now, this is an area that traditionally has been plagued by gun violence. A kickball game. It doesn't really matter what it is. Any opportunity where we can gain a little bit of the public's trust, where they're more willing to share information because they can see that we're sincere and wanting to help them, obviously gives us a better chance to succeed.
And what role does technology play in all of this?
Huge. It's a huge role. And I'll give you an example. Last year, at this time, we had about 15 functional cameras in the city. We now have close to 170. By the way, these are not cameras that we're hiding. We put a camera up. We put signs that say there is a camera here. And we started to look at the areas where we had the greatest number of gun violence. Let's put a camera here and see if this will help deter some of the crime. And it's had an impact, without a doubt. And we're monitoring these cameras, by the way. And so it gives us an insight into what's happening.
Did you look at other cities to see what they were doing? Cities where they were able to reduce crime rates, especially homicide rates, to say, well, maybe we should try that here.
Yes, and by the way, we continue to do that. You know, we're not going to claim to be the smartest or the most innovative. We want to do that as well. But if someone somewhere has an idea, or if someone's figured something out that works, you know, we're all ears. Ultimately, all we want is to have less crime and less victims, and it doesn't matter to us who gets the credit. We just, you know, we want to make sure people are safe.
How does Miami compare to other cities of comparable size right now? When you look, especially with crime in general, but also, you know, I mean, still staying on this, the homicide rate.
So on the homicide rate, I'll give you some examples. So, and this is for this past year. New Orleans has a population of 393,000. They had 137 homicides. By the way, that is a nearly 40-year low for them. They're doing great. They have a real-time crime center. But when you consider their population is significantly lower than us, they had 137. Baltimore has a population of 611,000. They had around 300 homicides. That's a drop for them, 300. Cleveland has a population of 385. At the end of September, I don't know where they finished, but at the end of September, they had 100 homicides. So we're comparing quite favorably to some of these other cities. Miami has a population of 470,000 residents, but a daytime population of 1 million when you consider merchants, visitors, tourists, the cruise industry, people getting off the ships. And so when you compare those numbers, we're thrilled.
When you look at the crime across the board, whether it's thefts, assaults, homicides, most crime rates are down. Sexual assault, though, is up. But, I mean, again, do you think it's all this engagement? Is it the technology that's helping to reduce? Is there some other factor you could put your finger on as to why things they seem to be getting better statistically?
I mean, there's a few factors, and I think it's happening really in a lot of places. There's some cities that have had an increase. But speaking in general terms, crime is trending downward over the past year and a half or so. We were going up in terms of homicides, but that has changed. And I think technology, community engagement, you know, the police is doing a much better job in understanding we need people's help.
Something interesting too is this, is that, you know, statistics tell us that things are getting better and it's safer, but perception isn't always the same. It doesn't always follow with statistics. And you look at what happened, and I know this is not in your community, but you look what happened just up the street in Parkland last year. We had that the Parkland shooting, the horrible tragedy. Things like that happen, and the perception is the world's not safe. But statistics show us it's getting safer. Do you think people feel safer right now?
You know, I don't know. It's a great question. I guess it really depends. If you're one of the folks that have been victimized, and it doesn't really matter what it is, somebody could have opened your car door because you left it unlocked and they stole your sunglasses or loose change, it's still a terrible feeling that somebody violated your space. People now are so much more engaged in what's happening. And when you consider social media, news outlets, they're just more aware. And so when a crime happens somewhere, especially something heinous like in Wisconsin, people are aware of that and it makes them feel less safe. Honestly, in the past, we just weren't as in tune. And, you know, ignorance is bliss. And so that's what happens. We're just far more aware of some of the just horrific things that happen. And it scares us.
Again, we're talking with Miami Police Chief George Kalina, and we're discussing how the statistics, the crime rate, the murder rate, so many of these are dropping in the city of Miami in this past year. And we, as we've heard, it's that engagement with the community, but it's also technology that is helping to reduce these numbers. Do you feel safer in your community? What questions do you have for the police chief? Give us a call, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-9576. Or you can always find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. I wanted to stay with the technology, and I wanted to ask you about it. And I know this is mostly something that's been done with the county, but I wanted to know how it's impacted the city. When we talk about this spotter technology, I believe it's shot spotter technology. How does that work? Is that something that your department has also been involved in?
Yeah, so we've deployed shot spotter technology, and essentially what it is, just so the audience can understand, it's acoustic sensors that we put up in areas where we know we've had gun violence. It picks up, it detects the sound of gunfire. There's logarithms that are in place. We are alerted of that. It allows us to dispatch officers immediately to that area. We don't have to rely on someone calling in. So if perhaps someone didn't hear the gunshot or someone thought it was something else, well, with ShotSpotter, we're alerted and we can respond and also send out fire rescue to treat someone who might have not gotten treatment.
How accurate is the technology? Basically, it's listening for gunfire, and then it's telling you within a certain area where it came from?
Correct. And the more sensors you have, the more direct. It is extremely accurate. And we've had instances, like I was just explaining, where no one called the police, but we responded because of ShotSpotter and actually found someone shot that then were able, of course, to help. In addition to that, what we've done in the city is that we've taken these cameras that I was just speaking about and we've integrated it with ShotSpotter. So when there's a ShotSpotter alert, if we have cameras in the area, then they will tilt and zoom to the area of where the shot came from to give us a better chance to better investigate that crime later.
And with that information, has the department just made more arrests, or again, is it just a deterrent?
Well, it's all of those things. Ideally, we want it to be a deterrent. Although I want to catch bad guys, obviously it's better that a crime didn't occur at all. What we're searching for is the absence of crime. But yes, absolutely. Of course, it helps us. And what's happened is also it gives the community the idea that we want to do a better job. And so they're more willing to help us as well because they can see that the effort is being put in to keep them safe.
Right now, can you tell me about, you know, how many different communities or areas where the ShotSpotter technology right now is located?
Yeah, so we have ShotSpotter technology in the north end of our city in what is known as Model City. A lot of that area is covered. We're covering elements, parts of Little Haiti. We have Overtown that is covered, and we're expanding the coverage there. And now we're coming into Little Havana and starting to cover some of that area as well.
And yeah, what are the plans for expansion of this technology?
We'll continue. So as we'll keep looking, and wherever it is that we're having instances of gun violence and wherever we have the most is where we'll go to next. And so we're going to continue in the police department. As long as we see positive results, we'll make sure that we're pushing, you know, our leadership, our legislators, the commissioners, the mayor, the manager, to keep giving us the resources to keep Miami safe.
Again, 800-743-9576. Before I go to the phones, just let me switch topics. So many different things I want to cover with you. Let's talk about the issue of marijuana. There was a Miami New Times investigation that found in the past 3 years, close to 6,000 people have been arrested in Miami-Dade County for possession of less than 20 grams of pot. However, this can be qualified as a misdemeanor. Can you help us understand your approach, your department's approach in dealing with people when they're caught with a small amount of marijuana? What do you want them to do?
So what we're doing now in the city of Miami, and it's a little complicated in that it is still illegal in the state of Florida to possess marijuana.
It's still a federal, yeah.
It's still against state law.
Right.
And so we have to be careful in what we do, because we don't want to give anybody the idea that we're going to supersede a state statute. However, in Miami, what we've done is we now have a civil citation program. The idea behind it is that if you're a young person and you have a use amount of marijuana and you haven't been in trouble in the past, we want to give you a citation. That is, you're not being arrested. You're not going to have a criminal record. And the idea is that we don't want this to perpetuate a lifelong problem. You know, now maybe you can't get accepted to law school, for example. You have a hard time getting a job. We don't want that to happen. So we want to give you a chance. And you'll have multiple chances in the city of Miami with a citation, as long as you have proper identification, as long as there isn't other more serious offenses attached.
Yeah, I mean, because you said, look, it's complicated. So what is it you're training your officers to do when they end up in that situation? What are they looking for? What are they trying to grasp as to, how do I handle this person? Is this a person I don't want to ruin their life? It's a small amount. What are they doing? How are you training them in that moment?
So what we've told them and what our policy is that ideally, if that person is not someone who is a career criminal and who has a use amount less than 20 grams of marijuana, you will issue a citation. If there are extraordinary circumstances, then you will make the arrest, but you will list why you made the arrest as instead of giving the citation. I'll give you an example. Let's say we're looking for a prolific burglar, and we have a description, and we stop you and you match that description and you were laid out at night and you have a small amount of marijuana. We need to identify who you are if we think that you are a menace. Outside of a scenario like that, you're going to receive a citation, because again, the idea is we don't want to ruin someone's life forever on what is a misdemeanor charge.
All right. Again, 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. If you've got a question for the police chief, let me go to the phones real quickly here. I've got Herbert, who's been waiting in Opa-locka. Herbert, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you doing, sir? I just want to say hi to the police chief. And then my question is about the camera. We probably need more camera. And then I want to know how high they put the camera. That's not, people not going to be stealing those camera or damage them or something like that. So that was my question. More camera we have, and then, you know, when a crime happened or shooting or a murder or something like that, is going to help the investigation or the police to get to that person quicker with the camera. Okay, so that was my question for the police chief, and thank you very much.
Herbert, thank you so much for the call. All right, so as you said before, you're not hiding the cameras. You're putting up signs. You're letting them know these are here. We're watching.
That's correct. And typically we put these cameras, they are at elevated positions because it gives us a better view of what's happening. We have to, and first of all, Herbert, thanks for calling. I recommend for someone who's thinking about home security, it doesn't matter where you live, check with your police department, your local police department, because if you're going to install a camera, you may want to check with your local PD, and they may have a program where they can receive your feed depending on the camera that you put in. In the city of Miami, it's one of the things that we're doing. If you own a strip mall and you want to put in cameras to better protect your strip mall, for example, you can work with our virtual policing unit and we can plug into that feed as well and help monitor, you know, your property.
And speaking of cameras, by the way, too, is remind us, you know, with your department body cameras and the use of body cameras right now, does everybody in your department have one?
Everybody in the department has one that works in patrol. We still don't have cameras to give to investigators because the amount of times that they're interacting with someone out in the street is limited. And so those cameras are going to the people that are in the street interacting with the public more frequently. All of our patrol division, which are the guys out in the street, now have body cameras.
This has been a national conversation for a while, as you know, and it's been controversial. But your overall take on the use of body cameras, has it been useful? Has it helped in not just in cases and situations, but has it also helped in the trust between the public and police?
Yeah, it's helped in a lot of different ways. And so it's my personal belief that if you're an officer and you're using a body camera and someone knows, the person that you're dealing with knows that you have that camera, they are also more likely to adjust the way that they're behaving. And perhaps they're not as antagonistic, or perhaps they are less likely to attack and want to harm an officer because they know it's going to be captured on video. And so it prevents officers from being harmed that way. I believe, like with anything, that if you're wearing a camera and you're a policeman, you are in fact more likely to, you know, cross your T's and dot your I's. And that's also a positive. The only negative of the camera, which was something of an unintended consequence, is the expense in storing, because we have to store video for public record. And then the time in pulling public records to share those videos is a drain on manpower. But overall, the cameras have been quite successful.
So let's come back to the bigger picture again. As we look at crime rates are down, homicide rates are down, things are getting better. As you look into this new year, what's the goal? How do you keep reducing those numbers? How do you keep bringing them down?
So we're going to continue. We're super motivated now. And the fact that people have helped us the way that they have. And by the way, all we've really done in terms of the community helping us is we've gone out and asked for help. And it's just amazing what a simple concept that if you tell someone, man, I'd like to help you, you know, can you work with us? Most people say yes. So that part's been great. I think that we can do better. I mean, we have a ways to go. These are historic low numbers for us. But honestly, I think we consider them historically low, not just statistically, but perhaps we've accepted high crime in the city in the past, and it shouldn't be that way. I think those numbers can be lower. We're going to work towards them.
We got a question, by the way, on Facebook from one of our listeners, Rebecca Nichols, speaking about the issue of homicide numbers. And she asks, in reference to the homicide numbers being down for the county, she wants to know, I heard that police have changed the way they count homicides as well. I heard that if someone is shot and they die in the hospital, that is no longer counted as a homicide as it was in the past. Is there anything to that in how we are counting homicides and what is considered a homicide?
So the unlawful killing of a person is a homicide, and it doesn't matter where they die. So if they're shot and then they die in the hospital, it's still a homicide. If they die 3 days later, it's a homicide. And believe it or not, one of those 51 was a delayed homicide from 1972. So if you are shot, attacked unlawfully today, and you're harmed, and you die 10 years later from complications of that wound, it counts as a homicide. So it is common for us to have several delayed homicides every year that count towards our number. So it's actually the opposite of it doesn't count. No, they count. They all count. If someone was murdered, they were murdered.
And again, just finishing up, because you said you're optimistic for this upcoming year. Is there anything, you know, an expansion of programs, expansion of the technology? What's coming ahead for 2019 for your department?
We're hoping to be able to put even more officers on the street. You know, the city of Miami continues to grow, and we want to try to keep up with the growth. So it's important for us to try to put as many officers as we can. We're civilianizing some of the positions within the police department so we can put even more officers on the street. We're going to continue with the community engagement, hoping that more people want to help us still. And so we're going to be, you know, not just vocal, but out in the street. And we think that's going to make a difference. And by the way, the sexual assaults, believe it or not, even that's a good number for us, because what that means is that more people
are reporting.
And, you know, part of the Me Too movement, and even though it's a negative statistic on the books, it's a wonderful thing that someone is stepping up and saying, this is not okay.
Because that typically is a crime that is not, it's underreported.
It's underreported, without a doubt.
Again, crime statistics in Miami are down. Homicide rates, the lowest they've been in half a century. We've been talking with Miami Police Chief George Colina. Chief Colina, always a pleasure. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you. Anytime at all.
And that is our program for today. Yes, we were supposed to have our book club conversation. We're going to have to move that. Just sometimes that happens. Wanted to mention, too, earlier on the program, we talked about the new highway construction project that started yesterday in the city of Miami, and we asked our listeners to share on social media with the upcoming traffic construction that's coming. Will that force you to change your daily commute? Well, William Peck shared on Facebook, increasing traffic access anywhere downtown and especially Miami Beach without access to parking is kind of ridiculous. Common sense would dictate to invest in public transit. Also, Ginger Lang Vea shared, I think this is an ill-advised project, and the fact that MDX, the private company, is working with FDOT is a red flag for me. They're the ones who make the money on the existing tolls, and it seems this would be a conflict of interest. It's been proven that more roads lead to more traffic. All right, well, that's our program for today, this Tuesday, January 15th. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you again on Thursday.